Hey, everybody, it's Kai Rizdahl. Thanks for listening to the Corner Office Podcast. These are my conversations with the people running some of the biggest companies out there, industry leaders, if you will. Thanks again for being here. This time, I am talking to a guy named Tom Hayes. He is the president and CEO of Tyson Foods. You're probably familiar with Tyson's Chicken, and yes, that is what the company started out selling back in the 30s, but they are a whole lot bigger today. In fact, now, under the Tyson umbrella, you got a whole bunch of other things like Jimmy Dean and Hillshire Farms, and in the food and meat business, they are one of the biggest players out there. So here it is, my conversation with Tom Hayes. He was in Arkansas for this one, which is where Tyson Food is based.
We're expecting you. Won't you have a seat?
Ready to go to work?
Tom Hayes, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. Really happy to be here.
How does a guy with a BA in psychology from the University of New Hampshire wind up running one of the biggest food companies on the planet?
That is an excellent question, and a lot of folks probably want to know the answer to that,
yeah,
including myself.
Well, take all the time you need.
Yeah. You know, food has always been in my blood. I started in the business, in the food business, when I was at a very young age, at 15 years old. I was actually a dishwasher down the road from my house in Merrimack, New Hampshire, where I grew up. And I quickly, you know, started to really get engaged with the industry. I loved the vibe of it. It was something that was really fast-paced. And when you get slammed with dinner orders, things were nuts. And then you quickly sort of, you know, get out of that mode, and you were sort of rebuilding for the next day. And throughout college, I continued to work in restaurants. And when I got out of school, I didn't really think of doing anything else. Sort of got in the business, and the rest is history, as they say.
How often, just to go on a brief tangent here, how often on a day-to-day basis do you think of the person on the other end of the spectrum of the food industry from you, right? I mean, you're running this ginormous conglomerate, and eventually your product winds up in the hands of some fry cook at a restaurant in Merrimack, New Hampshire.
Yeah, so all the time. And I would say that, you know, probably one of the things that's just really exciting about Tyson, but also very challenging, unique, and we have to think about the entire spectrum. So we go from complete agriculture all the way to dining culture. Hmm. And for, you know, the team overall, you know, that is a constant focus for me as a CEO, always interested in what consumers want and then trying to match that with what we bring to the party in terms of our scale and all the great capabilities that Tyson brings.
Well, when you took over this gig a year-ish ago, what were the first couple of things you were thinking you had to do for this company?
You know, I didn't start out, Kai, thinking about, you know, what are all the things that I can bring necessarily. As I joined the company with the acquisition of Hillshire Brands, mm-hmm. it was more about how can I just do a good job and really have a positive impact on the team members. So I would say coming into the role as CEO was just a continuation of that. The company has an incredible heritage. It's been around since 1935. It started with, you know, very meager, you know, sort of beginning, and really to put food on the table of John W. Tyson and his family at the time. And so, you know, my thought was as I came in, you know, how do I continue that heritage and just be a good guy running a company that has a lot of heritage, a lot of, you know, certainly challenges and opportunities, and just continuing the mode of growing and growing in a way that we can all be proud of.
You did do a couple of things right away, though, right? You made the announcement about getting rid of antibiotics in some of your chickens. You talked about worker safety protocols for 95,000 of your employees here in the United States. I have to imagine you took those with an eye on the realities of food as an industry, but also the long-term sustainability and survivability of this company in an environment and an economy that is changing.
Yeah, no question. You know, the decision on antibiotics was pretty easy to make, hard to execute, but pretty easy to make.
Why hard to execute? Couldn't you just sign a piece of paper and say, make this happen?
Yeah, boy. Our team members would be really disappointed if they heard me say that. No, because, you know, the operations have to be absolutely clean. You have to be in a position where you're just running a really strong program overall from every part of the supply chain on poultry. And so we had been doing a great job, and we had been pushing towards that end for, you know, I'd say the last 7 or 8 years. But getting, you know, finally to the point where we said, you know what, we can go the rest of the way and go completely antibiotic free was, you know, a point in time where we had to make a commitment, and I was happy to make it. And we are now the world's largest producer of no antibiotic ever chicken. You know, as it relates to the team, yes, absolutely, we've made commitments to make lives better. We've been increasing wages at our plants pretty significantly, and focusing on safety and just sort of overall worker welfare has been a big focus of ours.
It is difficult work to be on the production line in this industry. It can be dangerous. It can be, and you've read the exposés as well as I have, it can be deeply distressing on a lot of levels. I wonder how often you get out into a facility.
Yeah, so it can be very dangerous, and we look to try to take that danger out, make it as safe as we possibly can. And we have a program throughout the entire supply chain and operations group called the We Care program. So everybody sort of looks for each other, watches out for each other, has each other's back. You know, when I came to the company, I was the leader of the supply chain, so the operations group, manufacturing, distribution, everything that goes with operating the company at Hillshire Brand. So I'd been to all those plants and, you know, have started to visit and have visited quite a few of our poultry manufacturing plants, also our beef and pork production plants. And so I'd say it's about once a month, sometimes twice, oftentimes three times a month. Depends on what's going on. The calendar is full with a lot of things, as you can well imagine.
Yeah.
But I try to get out to the facilities as much as I can.
Can we talk scale here for a second? Obviously, Tyson is one of the biggies. As we consider the companies that sell, in essence, protein to us, how important is it to be the biggest?
I don't think it's important to be the biggest. What is important is that the biggest do the things that are the most important. So I think the thing that we can bring to the party is just a way in which we operate that is going to be more and more sustainable over time. We got a lot of challenges getting, you know, quality food at an affordable price to the tables of folks in the U.S. For sure, but it's also a global challenge. The backyard farms are excellent, and a lot of people enjoy them, but the world's problems are not going to be solved through backyard farms alone. Big food needs to get into the conversation and, you know, face up some of the realities of dealing in big food and to, you know, actually proactively help and change the way that agriculture is going to evolve.
This is a little bit counterintuitive, but I wonder if you think that maybe protein, chicken and beef and the stuff we buy in the supermarket, maybe we've gotten too used to it being too cheap, if that makes any sense, right? Because at scale, you can provide it to us and we want it, but the protein that we eat comes with costs, you know, substantial costs, environmental and ecological.
There is a school of thought that says, you know, we kind of take it for granted, right? I mean, in America, yeah, we have been blessed with a wonderful agricultural community, a lot of hardworking people that, you know, do put affordable food on the tables of every American that we're tempting for every American. There's still a lot of food, you know, deserts for sure, and a lot of hunger in our country. But I would say that, yes, we have definitely been blessed with a low-cost food system. Now, part of that is geographical. We have the resources to, you know, provide food domestically. Frankly, a lot of our food products are exported because of, you know, what the U.S. can do. But it is something that certainly we have a worldwide advantage as it relates to an agricultural community.
Yeah. Let me throw a phrase at you here and get your reaction. You ready?
Yeah.
Plant-based protein.
Yeah, love it.
First of all, do you eat plant-based protein?
I do. Yeah, right. I do occasionally. I mean, I would say, you know, full disclosure, I'm more of a animal protein lover.
Fair enough. Me too.
Certainly. You know, at Tyson, we're all about protein. So it's we want to be leading in anything that is protein, because protein is nutrient dense and it does help feed the world more than any other food type, frankly, in a way that is going to be nutritious and healthy. So for us, you know, we want to look at what are the trends that are happening and how can we continue to make the animal protein sector more sustainable. But we're also looking at plant-based protein and anything that consumers want, as well as can be an affordable, sustainable technology to help feed the world on a sustainable basis. So absolutely, plant protein, very excited about it.
I mean, I guess, you know, I asked the question because in a way you guys are a little bit like Big Oil, right? Big Oil is now moving into solar and wind and all that stuff because it knows that it's not going to be able to do oil forever. And there's going to come a point where, you know, with however many tons of grain it takes to feed a cow to get me a hamburger, that's not going to be sustainable either.
you know, it's a complicated discussion, of course, but I think the thing that you're calling out is right, is that the big companies need to proactively move forward and make it a part of the equation to fix, you know, everything that we can fix today, as well as design solutions that are going to best meet consumer needs in the future. When I think about big oil, there has been, you know, a lot of good that's come out of the oil industry, and there's certainly, you know, a lot of things that where they've stumbled. And, you know, I would say that probably most companies are on the footing that they are looking to make things better. And, you know, if there's a message to take away from, you know, our discussion, at least one of them is that, you know, Tyson has done a lot of good things in the past, and we know that we're not perfect. But we are going to be a part of the discussion, in fact, in many areas, driving it to bring, you know, more sustainability and at the same time deliver high-quality, affordable food.
Like what? What are you doing?
There's several things, certainly in the poultry supply chain. So we have right here, I'm sitting in Arkansas, and we have a poultry research farm that we use to test new technologies about things that could use less grain and be better in terms of animal welfare, use less water. We have been looking at vertical farming, frankly, to see if there's some things for us to take away that would be more helpful there.
Sorry. Vertical, like up and down, as opposed to on a big piece of land.
Vertical up and down. Yeah, believe it or not, there's practices in Asia where these barns, poultry barns, are built on multi-level, and they are able to sustain an animal welfare experience for the birds that is, you know, is as good, if not better, than, you know, traditional. It's expensive, and so there, you know, needs to be a way in which you can lean into it with the poultry farmers, poultry growers, and, you know, still continue to deliver what you would want to in terms of a sustainability outcome. Huh. Yeah, you know, on the pork and the beef side of our business, what we do is continue to work with independent growers, because we don't grow our own. We do grow a small amount of our own hogs, but not the majority. They're purchased on the market from local farmers as well as on our beef side. So working with those individual farmers to understand, you know, how we continue to, you know, drive the more sustainability is what we're after there.
So when you fire up your Bloomberg terminal in the morning, do you check hog and beef prices real quick?
It depends on the day. Sometimes I do. You know, it depends on what is going on and what I'm focused on at the moment. But what I would say is that we have people that do that, not just when they fire up, but then they continue to watch it throughout the day. Right. As you can well imagine, they have their terminals up, and they're watching every single movement to make sure that we are properly positioned in the markets. But I do, at the end of the day, certainly take a peek and you know, make sure that I'm fully attuned to, you know, what's going on in the marketplace.
You've been in this industry for a while now, and I wonder maybe what the biggest change you've seen in those years is.
Yeah, the biggest change that I've seen certainly is the consolidation of retailers on the retail side of the business. And on food service, there has been a tremendous consolidation as well, with those food service operators that are becoming just more and more sophisticated about their total supply chains. So it's a good thing, because you want to continue to drive cost out where you can to bring the, you know, the affordability curve up. At the same time, there has been, from the consumer lens, just much more choice that people are demanding. They are, you know, looking for new things constantly. Consumers are exploring a lot more, so they, as much as they will want to eat comfort food and have, you know, things that are simple and sort of nostalgic, they're also looking for new experiences. So constantly there be you know, times in which they want to just treat themselves, explore through food, be engaged with maybe their imagination about being in another country or different geography, you know, through that taste experience. So I think that has certainly accelerated. The other thing is just the data that we have available to us today, of course, is very different. So there's a lot of focus on, you know, how do we use that data for insights to make, you know, either our system better or meet the needs of consumers a lot easier and a lot more effectively and keep our brands relevant. But certainly data is everywhere on food, and food has become, you know, really sort of a cultural, you know, excitement for individuals that are looking to have, you know, sort of this experience. Everybody's focused on experience, I would say, particularly millennials, taking pictures of food, and it becomes you know, an engagement like it's not been in the past. And I'd say that's probably the biggest thing that I see from a consumer perspective.
I wonder if, though, given the scale and the sheer industrialness of what it is that Tyson does, do you feel a little removed from the actual food part of your product from time to time?
You know, I can't say that I do, because we have so many people. We have about just under 300 R&D folks that what they do is not just look at the food science, but there are chefs that are part of that team. They're constantly designing new foods. Whenever we have customers in, we have a large R&D kitchen in Arkansas. We also have one in Chicago, and they're exploring constantly. So the food, if you were to come into our building, and you're, please come if you are.
I will next time I'm in Arkansas.
And take a tour around. You'd see. I mean, they're not just pictures of food, but you'd see the actual food being plated and having different experiences, either with customers or folks in the marketing group just looking at new combinations and new recipes. So it is front and center, and it might be easy to move away from that if you get lost in, you know, the supply chain nature of things or the operations part of it. But I would say that there too, at the plant level, constantly testing quality, and it is, you know, very much in the forefront of everything that we do.
A word here about the political environment in which this economy finds itself right now. Of the things that are happening in Washington, I imagine tax reform, tax overhaul is the biggest thing for you. What are you looking for out of Washington on that?
We're big fans of lower taxes for corporations, for sure.
Shocking.
Yeah, shocking, exactly. Well, you know, I think it's fine to, you know, want that, have a lower tax base. The question is, you know, how do you pay for it? And that's, you know, certainly what we're you know, engaged in now. And, you know, there's question marks around dynamic scoring. And, you know, I do believe that to the extent that corporations do receive a tax cut, that will be, you know, a large portion of that be reinvested, for sure. What it, you know, is exciting for Tyson is that our sales are, you know, predominantly in the U.S. We don't have a lot of sales outside of the country where we repatriate the cash. So we do sell a lot of exports outside of the country, but that's in U.S. dollars. And, you know, we have consistently been putting more of our income into wages, putting more of our, you know, cash to work in capital investment. So I think it's overall a good thing, but specific to Tyson, it would certainly be extraordinarily welcome if the rate comes down.
Let me push you on that a little bit, right? Because the White House has been saying, you know what, this is going to get a middle-class family an average raise of $4,000. Are you going to give your workers a $4,000 raise if you get a corporate tax cut?
We've been giving raises consistently. So I think there will be a part of that that does go back. And the other thing is, you know, for certainly if there's cash that we return to shareholders, you know, that may not meet that equation. But then what do the shareholders do with it? If they're investors, will they make another investment or in a growing company that adds jobs? I think overall, it is going to be better for the economy. For us, we will do things that do benefit our team members, whether it's directly in wages or, you know, adding capital to facilities that we might not have been otherwise. There's not a lot of that, but I say for sure it caused us to be making investments that are going to be focused on growing and adding jobs overall. And even though some of them may be things that need to be automated, there's, I think, the overall takeaway should be that it's going to be helpful for our company in terms of growth and adding jobs.
Last thing, and then I'll let you get out of here. What's your go-to, a hamburger, a nice chicken breast, or maybe a piece of pork or something?
Well, so, you know, it depends on how I'm feeling and what. If it's a weekend, I tend to go a little more aggressive. During the week, I got to say, you know, I do focus on breakfast foods. I'm a big breakfast fan. And so, you know, Jimmy Dean is a go-to breakfast sausage and sandwich, you know, that I like. And, you know, on the weekends, probably more towards the Tyson Anytizers line, which is an appetizer line of, you know, boneless chicken wings as well as bone-in chicken wings. And that's delicious. If you haven't tried them, please
do. All
right,
well, there you go. Tom Hayes, he's the president and CEO of Tyson Foods. Tom, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Tom Hayes there. He is the CEO of Tyson Foods. Thanks, of course, for listening. We've been releasing more of these things lately than we usually do. So if you've been enjoying them, subscribe, leave us a review, do that thing you do in Apple Podcasts. Really helps us, let us know what we're doing right and, you know, what we're doing wrong. This episode was produced, as most of them are, by Bridget Bodner. Marketplace is produced by Nancy Fargali. Sitar Nieves is the executive producer. Deborah Clark is the senior vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you next time.